Yes, let's start.
Okay, good afternoon. I will call the meeting to order and ask the secretary to call the roll. Misty?
Ed Curtis?
Present.
Phil Gilbert?
Present.
Ed Hightower?
Present.
Breon Lockett?
Present.
Mackenzie Rogers? Mackenzie is probably in the waiting room. I know she's waiting to join.
She's muted.
Okay.
Present.
Awesome. Thank you. Subhash Sharma?
Present.
Amy Scholler?
Present.
John Simmons?
Present.
Roger Tedrick?
Present.
A quorum is established by phone.
Okay, I want to welcome everyone to the special meeting. During this unprecedented time in the life of our country and our state and our nation and our university, where this public meeting is being conducted by Zoom video and telephonically and live streaming. First of all, Dr. Mahoney, I want to welcome you to your first board meeting as president of the system. What a welcome.
Yeah, that's how I always thought it would be.
This is how you envisioned it.
Yeah.
We are observing the social distancing here. Except Dr. Lockett, you may be a little too close, but I don't know the measure. But Dr. Lockett's behind me, which is kind of scary. But Luke, before we get started, I, for the record, I want you to go through the open meetings variation that we are operating under pursuant to the governor's directive.
Yeah, thank you. Typically, as folks might be aware or recall, the Open Meetings Act requires a quorum be physically present at the same location, and also that those participating by video and teleconference, their participation is allowed under limited circumstances. There are just a handful of exceptions to allow that. But under the governor's order, his executive order 20-07, he suspended the physical presence requirement as well as the conditions that limit when remote participation is permitted has also been suspended. So in that those have been suspended, those requirements, we're able to continue with the special meeting that was otherwise called in accordance and appropriately under the Open Meetings Act, but the physical presence requirements have been suspended that allow the participation even when there's not the meeting to be held even without a physical quorum present.
Okay. All right. Any questions of Luke regarding this procedure that we're operating under the governor's executive order? Okay. There will be a public questions and comments portion available at today's meeting to last up to 15 minutes total. Are there any persons who have requested their comments be read to the board, Ms. Whittington?
Yes, there are. And I have also emailed these to the board and president, chancellors. The first is from Libby Catt. I'm an art major at SIUE. I, along with numerous other students, believe that a refund of certain fees is far more fair. There are things that we paid for that are no longer valid: athletic, studio, computer, parking, meal plans, and of course housing. This is a large amount of money for us students, and for a lot of us, money that could make a difference in our lives right now as most of us are out of jobs due to COVID-19, please understand our hardships right now as students and make the right decision. Next speaker, Deborah Emerson. I would like to know if the studio and materials fees for art students will be addressed along with the other considerations the board is making. As a senior painting major, I am locked out of my studio and the supplies within. As art students, we also pay materials fees for our classes along with live instruction. I would like to ask that those material fees be addressed also. I understand it is a difficult time for the university, but it's also a difficult time for art students as well. We have to repurchase whatever supplies we don't have access to finish our classes or degrees. Elias Reed would like read. The March 18, 2020 notice states the effective March 19, 2020, 5 p.m. Morris Library proper will be closed to the public. The first floor computer lab room 139 has been reconfigured to accommodate social distancing. The first floor study area around Delights will be available for students, staff, and faculty to access a Wi-Fi Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. I request the following question be asked during the board meeting. Will former SIUC student alumni be allowed to use the SIU Morris Library computer, Wi-Fi scanner, and other services? The next letter is from Jeremy Noel, Union Representative, ASME, Council 31. Dear trustees of SIU, this letter comes to you on behalf of the ASME represented workers who are employed at SIUC residential halls. We would like to express our concerns and fears as frontline workers during the COVID-19 pandemic when SIUC made the decision to extend spring break due to the virus and took measures to reduce the risk by limiting students and workers on campus. We as culinary workers knew we had to hold back our fear and reservations and step up and take care of the students who decided to stay on campus. Our jobs are more than just cooking and cleaning. We are committed to making the students feel at home and comfortable. Through our actions, we help ensure that they will return and continue their education at SIUC. For this reason, we fought through our own fears and continued to provide the top-notch service our students have come to expect. We worked hard to make things seem business as usual for our students to ease their own fears, while deep down we are scared to death that we might contract the virus and take it home to our families. We have done this even though many of us and our family members have compromised immune systems and are considered at risk for severe reactions to the COVID-19 virus. When we received the message that two of our students tested positive and 21 other students have been quarantined, this news hit us hard. All these students passed through our dining facility and likely interacted with us. We are all now at heightened risk for contracting this illness. We appreciate that the university quickly implemented a plan of grab-and-go style of meal and offered the N95 masks to us. These were both good measures for safety, but these actions are at least a week late, since the virus has clearly been amongst us already. If the residential halls continue to stay open, there is a very high possibility that we will also contract the virus and, by extension, put our families at risk. For those reasons, we are asking the Board of Trustees to refund monies to the students for their housing and close the residential halls at SIU. Thank you for your time and consideration. Statement from David Johnson, President, SIUC Faculty Association. Thank you for meeting today to help ensure that SIU treats its students fairly as the COVID-19 crisis unfolds. SIU must move quickly to refund fees for any services students are not able to use while campus is closed. SIU will be under intense financial pressure soon enough, but so are our students, and overcharging them now would cost us in the long run. SIU must continue to do all it can to support the physical and mental health of staff and students. Students and staff alike are stepping up the challenge of the sudden and painful loss of the ability to work together in person, but we must also be realistic in our expectations for all concerned and emphasize encouragement, flexibility, and understanding. We also need to start planning for the longer-term impacts of COVID-19. Those effects are uncertain, but with on-campus enrollment likely to decline and the state budget certain to be under great stress, we may face a crisis greater than the budget crisis of 2015 to 2017. Three principles should guide us. One, our academic mission must be paramount. SIU spends money on many things, all of them valuable, but teaching and research and the faculty and grad assistants who do our teaching and research must be prioritized. Among the hard questions we must ask is whether SIUC can continue running a $6 million annual deficit in athletic spending. Two, we must prioritize our people. SIU weathered the state budget crisis with only few, if painful, layoffs. It is essential to morale on campus, already low before this crisis, that we make it clear that layoffs will be a last resort. Three, we must work together. This unprecedented crisis requires an unprecedented level of teamwork and solidarity. All staff and student constituency bodies must be involved, but faculty, given their central role in the academic mission of this university, must play a central role in decision-making going forward. If decisions are made in a top-down basis with only token faculty input, morale and confidence will sink further. But if we pull together and make decisions together, we can emerge as a stronger university. I am proud of how our university has handled this crisis so far. The caring and compassion evident across our university community now should continue to guide us as we face the even larger challenges ahead. The Faculty Association stands ready to be a partner in helping SIUC meet those challenges. Lauren Bartlow had a question. If students are no longer allowed on campus to do labs and use lab supplies and equipment, will a partial amount of lab fees be waived as well? Elias Reed submitted the following to be read. On about June 13, 2000, March 6, 2001, public hearings were conducted at the Irma Hayes Center by SIUC Chancellor John Jackson, SIUC Associate Chancellor for Diversity Dr. Seymour Bryson, and other SIUC officials to create a dialogue with the Carbondale Northeast Community African American residents concerning reasons affecting their lack of participation in the SIUC civil service hiring process. A recommendation was made to reinvigorate the SIUC civil service learner, trainee, and apprentice learner programs with the goal of increasing diversity. I attended the June 13, 2000 and March 6, 2001 public hearings. As the Carbondale NAACP Labor Industry Committee chairperson, I attended the April 20, 2013 SIUC Civil Service Employment Workshop that was conducted at the SIU Law School. After the workshop I stated that a similar SIUC Civil Service Employment Workshop needed to be conducted at the Irma Hayes Center. SIUC Associate Diversity Chancellor Dr. Linda Smith agreed and cooperated with the Carbondale NAACP Labor Industry Committee to have a SIUC Civil Service Employment Workshop conducted at the Irma Hayes Center on November 13, 2013. During the 4 p.m. February 6, 2019 meeting, I asked the SIUC Associate Diversity Chancellor Todd Bryson, could he have a SIUC Civil Service Employment Workshop conducted at the Irma Hayes Center on about March 2019 for the unemployed Carbondale Northeast minority residents? SIUC Associate Diversity Chancellor Todd Bryson answered no. On March 27, 2020, I received SIU's response to my FOIA request stating that there are currently 218 white male, 118 white female, 13 black male persons employed at SIUC tenured faculty positions, 552 white male, 57 black male, 1 black male Vietnam veteran, 16 white male, 0 black male electricians, 9 white male, 1 black male plumbers, 25 white male, 4 black male, 0 black female maintenance laborers employed at SIU civil service job positions. The March 4, 2020 SIUDE newspaper article states that SIU President Daniel Mahoney began his presidency of the SIU system on March 2, 2020 by signing the CEO Action for Diversity and Inclusion Pledge. I request that the above paragraph be read at the following and the following question be asked during the March 30 SIU board meeting. Can SIU President Daniel Mahoney provide assistance in having another 2020 SIU Civil Service Employment Workshop conducted at the Irma Hayes Center in 2020? And I have one more question from Lisa Johnson asking if whether any refund decision will also apply to SIU Medical School.
Okay. Many of those questions I think will be answered or at least addressed during this board meeting. The next item on the agenda is an authorization for presidential delegation for refunds. General Counsel Prater, will you introduce this item?
Yeah, certainly, and then I'll probably provide it over to the president here in just a moment. But there's been discussion amongst the campuses, of course, and with the president daily, pretty much, about fees, various kinds. You heard a couple mentioned in some of the public comments, but what campuses might need to do or be willing to do in terms of refunds for students for programs and things that they won't avail themselves of this semester. And so looking at the bylaws, because authority lies with the board to make those decisions about most of the fees and charges for students, I felt like it would be appropriate to have a delegation to the president to have that authority if the board was in favor of that. And then, of course, he could designate chancellors, the leaders appropriate, to then put those actions into place. So that's the question that has come up and why we're gathered here today to authorize that delegation to the president if the board approves. Dr. Mahoney probably has some additional background, maybe, that he wants to get a little more into the weeds, perhaps.
Hey, Dr. Mahoney, do you have any comments you'd like to make about this item?
Yeah, sure. And this is something that's happened at a couple of the other Illinois institutions. We're dealing with a lot of constantly changing things, and even as you heard in the comments, some of the different fees. Some are fairly more obvious to housing and dining, where you get into course fees and everything else. We're going to have to look at everything over the next several weeks and several months, and we want the flexibility to look at those. We have money that we know coming from the federal government, from the legislation, that will allow us to provide emergency grants for students. We also are raising money on both campuses that will allow us to address some of these needs, but there's going to be a lot of things that we'll have to figure out, and so having that flexibility to decide these while keeping the board informed throughout the process, this will be a lot easier than continually having to come back for every small decision we might have to make on refunds or grants over the next couple weeks and the next couple months.
Okay. Chancellor Pembroke, do you have any comments you'd like to make? Chancellor Pembroke?
Yes, can you hear me now?
Yes,
we
can hear you now.
Thank you. So we've had extensive conversations, particularly around housing and meal plans, and we're prepared to move forward on that should you authorize the president to authorize us. I would say that some of the other things, such as the course fees, we're looking at it at a micro level. The science areas have course fees, but it turns out that we're using the course fee money to develop online virtual laboratories, so I think that that will work itself out without a refund. The art materials, which is the other area that we're looking at, art professors are taking different approaches to that. Some of them are actually sending art materials to the students, which they would have received in person. So I think in the next 2 to 3 weeks, we should have a more detailed micro-level analysis of the course fees.
Chancellor Dunn?
Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. I have a rather detailed report because I think there are things that are occurring here that it's important that you know, and this is beyond fees. Many of you are aware that we now have had two students who've been identified with COVID-19. The good news is they are doing very well, recovering, and they're receiving excellent care. I have spoken with both of the mothers of the students, and they are complimentary of the treatment and care. And kudos to Dr. Grace and Dr. Bennett for their personal attention and support, as well as many, many other people. Saturday, we chose, with input from Jackson County Health Department, to quarantine 21 students living in the residence where the affected students live. Thus far, the quarantine is going well, and no one is exhibiting any signs of any kind of distress, etc. Related to the above, the food workers in West Hall are nervous and questioning whether they too should be quarantined. I have conferred with Bart Haxton, who is the director of Jackson County Public Health, and he believes that there may be a bit of an overreaction. Specifically, what he said is, the guideline to follow is, and I quote, direct interaction, less than 6 feet for a period of 10 minutes or more. We are in the process of reviewing a video, and thus far found no food worker who meets this level of concern. Related to food, we are now boxing all lunches for students who live on campus. The student approaches the table where the box lunches are, swipes his or her card, takes the box, and returns to his or her room. But this is going well, and there is no direct interaction between the student and food worker. Online classes are moving forward with little disruption, etc. I'm very pleased about that. I'm impressed with our faculty, staff, and students and their patience and support and responsiveness. We are in good communication with constituency groups, including the Faculty Senate, Graduate Council, reviewing with them an option to allow students to opt for a pass-fail grade, some continuing discussion as to how this might impact selected students in professional programs or graduate students occurs and is ongoing. The coordination with Southern Illinois Health, Jackson County Health Department, our own School of Medicine is excellent. It's a great team effort. Regarding commencement, we are sending graduate students a survey to get their input on options for graduation, including a virtual event as well as a special celebration at a future date. The Faculty Association is pleased that we have proactively taken the position that if requested by a faculty member, the tenure clock can be extended. We have also reassured the FAA that online material prepared with the faculty member is their property. The only exception being if the work was done via grant provided by the university or an outside entity and whatever their restrictions might be. Our team meets via teleconference call daily at 10 o'clock for updates. This includes the vice chancellors as well as legal counsel and frequently School of Medicine personnel. And please be advised that we are in conversation with SIH, Southern Illinois Healthcare, to be of further assistance to them if needed. Finally, I'm very, very proud of the collective effort, and we are trying to communicate such via updates. Transparency is the goal, and I've done a pretty good job with it. Thank you.
Chancellor Dunn, how many total students do we have on campus?
That number would be somewhere in the vicinity of 350.
Okay. Chancellor Pembrook, how many students we have on SIUE campus?
Same number, between 325 and 350.
And how are they being fed? Is it do they go to a dining hall or?
So on the SIUE campus, most of those students that are still with us are in Cougar Village. Cougar Village, a lot of those facilities have their own cooking spaces. But I should say that I think most of the students are using what we're doing, which is a delivery of weekly meals, 21 meals at a time, to take students through a period of a week. So our dining services, the people come in, they prepare a large number of meals, we distribute those, and then basically they wait for a week to do the next set of meals.
Okay. Chancellor Dunn, going back to Carbondale, this explain to me this grab-and-go style. Are those these box lunches?
Yes.
Or box meals, I mean?
Yes, they're box meals, lunches are provided, dinners, breakfast. They're put on a table. The student accesses the box, wipes his or her own card, and there's no direct interaction between the food worker and the student.
Well, I just want to make sure that we are doing what we can to protect our food service workers, and I assume that if any of them develop any symptoms, that the SIH or the health of Jackson County Health Department will provide testing for them.
I've asked that question, and thus far, there is no signs or symptoms that are evident with among our food workers. By the way, I think I want to comment on this as well. Both of us are committed to the idea of returning prorated amounts on tuition and food for those who are not on campus. So that will be done.
Not tuition, housing and dining.
Housing and dining.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Are there any comments from board members?
Comments from what?
Board members. Any of the board members? Okay.
Has any decision made what kind of fees will be refunded?
What was that, Dr. Sharma?
Has a decision is made what kind of fees will be refunded, or all the fees will be refunded?
Yes, have there been any decisions?
What kind of decisions? Yeah, we haven't made a decision until you give us the authority to make a decision. But once you do, the only decision we're ready to move forward with at this point is housing and dining. That's the easiest one. As Chancellor Pembroke and Dunn both pointed out, some of these other ones are a little bit more complicated and we take time to look at. And again, we have different ways of looking at them, whether they're full refunds, whether there's emergency grants that we have from the money from the federal government, or we can use some of the money we're raising. We'll have to figure out some of those other ones later. But the housing and dining is the one where we're ready to move on more quickly.
I will give an example as it relates to parking, just to show the complexity of this. Our parking cycle runs from September through August. And so there are a lot of people making assumptions, but we don't know whether the campuses will be open again on May 1, June 1, July 1. So to know how to move forward on an adjustment like that, we simply do not have enough information at the moment. But in the area of meals and housing, we think we can see to the end of this semester to know how to treat those.
Okay, and Dr. Mahoney is going to, once these decisions are made, he's going to be informing the board of those decisions, so we will be aware of what fees are being refunded and hope maybe the source of the funding, if it comes from the federal government or from other funds that are being raised. But we are going to try to be as fair as possible to our students, because especially the ones that are not graduating, we want them to come back. So if we're going to err, I'd rather err on the side of caution than refund those fees that there's any question about. Okay, do I have a motion to approve this item?
So moved.
Been moved by Dr. Sharma, is that correct?
Yes.
Do I hear a second?
Second. This is Roger.
Okay, second by Trustee Tendrick. We are now going to ask for a roll call vote on this item.
Curtis?
Yes.
Gilbert?
Yes.
Hightower? Hightower? Okay. Lockett?
Yes.
Rogers?
Yes.
Sharma?
Yes.
Scholar?
Yes.
Simmons?
Yes.
Tedrick?
Yes.
Hightower?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, I declare the motion is passed. I would now like President Mahoney to give us an update for the SIU system about what all is going on, what has happened, and I will say this, that Dr. Hightower and I have been in constant contact with Dr. Mahoney, and he has provided updates to all of the board members. I can't thank him enough for the leadership he has given this system. President Mahoney?
Yeah, and I'll just go through some of the things. I know Chancellor Dunn talked some, and I'm sure Chancellor Pembroke will add to what I say. We have been doing daily phone calls across the system and trying to make sure that we're all on the same page, that we're making decisions in a thoughtful way. Our priorities consistently have been putting our students first. So the priority is on students, making sure they get the best education we can provide, and we can support them as much as we can financially in other ways. Part of the reason for today's meetings. Focusing on our employees, who we've continued to pay. We continue to pay our student employees through the semester, but also all of our other employees, making sure that they are being compensated even when they cannot work at home due to the nature of their job, and really limiting the number of people we have on campus. So if you've been on any of the campuses, it's been pretty empty, and that's, we are really trying to follow the governor's orders on that, and people have really been as accommodating as possible to do that. And we also try to meet the needs of the state. We're a public university, and we've been trying to be as collaborative as we can with healthcare officials, with state officials, and trying to help in any way the system can. And I know Jerry Cruz will talk a little bit later about some of the things they're doing, but there has been a lot of things that we have been able to do to help support what's going on in the state. As we've been doing that, we try to adapt as quickly as possible. New information comes all the time, and we try to adapt to that. At the same time, not trying to move so quickly that we end up with some truly bad unintended consequences. So being thoughtful but quick has been the approach, and really being cooperative and collaborative. And that's been, a real thing I've been positive about across the system is the amount of collaboration we've had, but also across the state of Illinois. I've said to several people, I've had more contact with the other presidents of the Illinois institutions here in the last few weeks than I did in 5 years in South Carolina with the presidents there. This has been a real collaborative effort. We're talking, not necessarily daily, but sometimes daily, sometimes at least two or three times a week, to make sure, again, we know what everybody else is doing, and there's real collaboration there. Say a few things. First of all, real thanks to our faculty and staff. The move to online and alternative modes of delivery is not easy. Someone who still teaches, I can understand and relate to how hard that must be. But they've been just doing an incredible job in doing that as quickly as they've had to do it, and really trying to focus on anything they can to help our students out. And it's been incredibly impressive how quickly they've done that. But also the things they've done outside of the classroom. So certainly our medical school faculty have been on the front lines of this, but also even trying to produce things like hand sanitizer. The National Corona Ethanol Research Center has actually stepped forward on that and trying to produce hand sanitizer. So doing everything, again, we can help out even beyond our students. I do want to thank the students as well for being as flexible as they have been and really listening to advice for the most part as much as possible. That has helped, I think, to reduce the number of people on campus, and I'll get to that in a second, but we have, maybe a few hundred people on campus. It's a lot less than it normally would have been, and most people really have chosen to stay home, which was, in many cases, the best decision, although not always the best one. It depends on their situation. I want to thank the leadership at each location that really has continued to prioritize our students, faculty, and staff in making those decisions, whether it's about paying or how to provide education. That's been a big part of it. Making difficult decisions on housing and dining, this has often been one of the more controversial ones. Dr. Wesley McNeese shared with me an article today just talking about the need to focus on diversity, equity, inclusion. I know some people have pushed for the idea that sending everybody home is the best solution. I frankly do not believe that's the case. That's based on the assumption they've got someplace else to go, and the place that they have to go will be a safe place. A place where they have food, a place where they have access to the internet, and for some of our students, that's simply not the case. So trying to provide flexibility for our students and meeting the needs of all of our diverse students was an important decision that we made, while also, again, trying to reduce the number of students on campus. And now that they're here, I think the worst thing we could do would be to send them home. That sends them back out again. Right now, we want to follow the governor's order to stay at home, and that includes our students in the residence halls. But again, I think we're trying to make those decisions as thoughtful as we can, understanding every student's situation is a little bit different. We worked really well, as Chancellor Dunn mentioned, with local health departments, with healthcare providers, with the state. We've received lots of requests for collaboration, for help. We've responded, again, as quickly as we could and tried to help out in as many different ways, whether it's trying to provide additional personnel for testing, to other needs that people have had. We made decisions based on their advice, so we've listened closely to the healthcare providers and their advice. Tried to support their efforts as much as possible as we could, and tried to do as much as we could possibly to help spread the spread of the disease and try to control that as well as possible. But I've been, again, very happy with the collaboration I've seen from all of the people in the SIU system with those outside agencies. This is not us working in isolation. It's really working with everybody. This is a statewide and community effort. And we've had to deal with new challenges throughout it, and that means constantly adjusting. And so whether it's what Chancellor Dunn just talked about, where we had a couple of students test positive, that required a change in what we did in that particular residence hall, as well as how we did food service providing and trying to, again, focus on what our students need and protecting our employees as best we possibly can. So again, every day there seems like there's something we've got to adjust to, but people have been trying their best to adjust it with those priorities of our students, our employees, and the best. What's best for the state is as always being paramount in our thoughts. So we continue to do that. I've, again, appreciated the collaboration that I've seen in the system and across the state, and there's still a lot to do, but I will turn it back over to you, Mr. Chair, and then I think we'll go to Jerry or Randy.
Well, one thing I'm gonna want you to do, and John Charles, I see you. Can you hear me, John? John Charles? thought he was here.
Yes, sir, I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to want you to work with Dr. Mahoney in putting together a little synopsis of what the system has been doing on each of the campuses and get that to our legislators and the governor so they will know how proactive we have been in trying to quell this the spread of this virus on our campuses and how the proactive actions we have taken to help the situation in the state.
Yeah, we did have a phone call with the legislators a couple weeks ago to give them an update at that point, but a lot's changed since then, so I think it's a good time for an additional update. So John and I will work on that and get that out today.
Okay. Chancellor Pembroke, anything else you want to add?
I just wanted to touch on two or three things that President Mahoney said. The flexibility of the faculty, the staff, and the students in terms of an entirely new curriculum to adjust to that in 2 weeks, I think that's an amazing thing. He mentioned that before the Ethanol Research Center has ramped up to create hand sanitizer, so we're very pleased with that. Our campus has been approached in terms of COVID testing and using CLIA labs to try to create more testing and in a quicker fashion. The School of Nursing put on a virtual conference to try to train nurses in this environment. And I could say, and I think Carbondale is in the same situation, we were approached by FEMA and the Corps of Engineers just in terms of emergency planning at the state level. So all of that, I think, shows the responsiveness that you were talking about. I wanted to share some good news. Last Monday was the beginning of our summer and fall registration period, and that was a real head-scratcher. We had no idea how students would react to that. And the first few days, we've had over 90% of what we normally would get under regular conditions. So some of the normal things of the university are moving forward, so I was pleased with that. I wanted to let you know that we have been asked, I think you know this, but we've been asked to keep records on the bottom line costs relating to COVID. So we have been tracking revenue streams that we have to refund. We have been tracking new personnel costs, and we've been tracking new equipment costs. So we think because of the support levels of the state and federal bodies that we'll have some information to share with them, hopefully related to refunds for the university. Last but not least, I just wanted to underscore everything that seems like it's being reviewed and the grading process, moving to using some A to F and some pass-fail, depending on which students, depending on which bodies are requiring what for licensing, graduation, and accreditation. It's tricky business, but the faculty associations and administration have been working together with the students, and I think we're getting to where we need to be on that issue with lots of flexibility. So I think you should be proud of what's happening on the campuses. A lot of great things happen.
Thank you. Chancellor Dunn, anything else you wish to add? Chancellor Dunn?
Yes. Can you hear me? Yeah, no, other than just kudos to the president and Randy and others for coordination, working together. It's really been a team effort, and we're proud, pleased with that. Thank you.
Okay, I'm now going to ask Dean Jerry Cruz for some comments. I will say this. A couple weeks ago, I had an email exchange with Trustee Curtis, who understandably, I don't know how he gets any sleep at all. And I'm going to read to you, he said, part of his email back to me, he said, unprecedented time in our country. Our 10,000 employees and the SIU School of Medicine physicians are working tirelessly to serve everyone in need. You can be proud of your world-class medical school. I don't think there's a better medical school in the country than what we have in Springfield. And under the leadership of Dean Cruz, with the support that he's received from everyone, and I read an article yesterday in the Springfield Journal newspaper about the wonderful things that they were doing. I talked to Jerry early today, and he was kind of modest about it. I think that we need to send a message out. If there's anybody in the press that's listening to this, they need to be aware that the SIU system, and particularly the SIU School of Medicine, is at the forefront and on the ground in helping battle this war against this virus. And I cannot be any more proud of our medical school and the support staff that we have on each of these campuses and the health services on each of these campuses. So, Jerry, I'm going to turn it over to you, and why don't you go through what you spoke earlier to me and President Mahoney about.
Sure. Thanks so much. I'll first echo the statements about collaboration and teamwork that's gone on throughout the system and with the state and with our partners. It has been really amazing. I'll just illustrate a few of those things. Obviously, our focus has changed mainly now to caring for our patients first, those that are near all of our practices, and then those that are in our 88 county region of accountability. So we have worked well with Southern Illinois Healthcare in the Carbondale region, with the Blessing Health System in West Central Illinois, but most specifically here in Springfield, where our largest presence is, with Memorial Health System and HSHS, also with Springfield Clinic, a physician practice group, and with the Sangamon County Health Department. So here in Springfield, those five organizations that I mentioned have really been a great team. We've done most of the things that we've done consistently. We've been really ahead of the game because of what everybody brings to the table from those organizations in our level of preparedness. We've also had great collaboration with the governmental officials from the state. We've had almost constant communication from the governor's office, from Jesse Ruiz, deputy governor for education, and Saul Flores, deputy governor for health human services, and also from HFS, from Director Teresa Eagleson. And then on a federal level, from Congressman Rodney Davis and Congressman Baron LaHood, they've responded, to the needs that we've had, because they have been many. And most of you probably heard about the shortages of PPE, personal protective equipment. Those things are real. And the organizations we're partnering with have stepped up, and then everybody in the community stepped up, and the government has started to step up as well. So we have a response team here, and I'd just like to mention what they've done. Our response team is headed by Dr. Harry Lawson, who's our Chief Medical Officer and Associate Dean for Clinical Affairs and Population Health. And he and his team are the ones who really helped us work with the others in the area to get to the level of preparedness where we are. So we've had to do some amazing things. We've had to stop elective surgery, as have the other organizations. We've cut back on our visits in the office, and their own hours are only 15% of what they were before. I will say that our virtual contacts, our telemedicine, has expanded because Medicare, Medicaid, Blue Cross, and hopefully the rest of the insurers will comply with the governor's order and will allow us to use devices that we haven't used in the past, like FaceTime and WebEx, in addition to our regular telemedicine equipment. So we'd like to see those ramp up so we can continue to care for those patients. But the hospital census is way down, as Mr. Curtis will tell you, and everybody has tried to get the equipment they need to prepare for the surge that is coming, and it has started to come to downstate Illinois. The numbers have clearly shown us that, over the past 2 days. Also, Teresa Smith is our Executive Director of Human Resources. She's just done amazing work with the Families First Act and other pieces of legislation and regulation to get everything mapped out for our students, our learners of all kinds, and all of our employees. Our clinical employees, we are down by about 50%. They're working on a rotating basis. On the academic side, virtually nobody is here. They're all working from home or doing other things at the moment that are useful. So she's been great. then I'll mention Lori Williams, our Associate Dean for External Relations. She works a lot with Laura Hepp-Kessel, our telehealth director, and Tracy Smith, who has developed our community health worker program and hotspotting program. We have a proposal going into the governor's office and going into the HFS office today. The final proposal to dramatically expand telemedicine, telehealth, and to convert some of our community health worker program into a pandemic health worker program for the entire region. So all five of our regions, which reach down to the very southern tip of the state, you know, will be involved with this. And that team has really turned that around as well. Also, my hat is off to our researchers. When the IDPH lab for testing in Springfield is about 150 feet that direction from me in our building. And when they wanted to go to a second shift, 12 of our, research faculty, assistant researchers, medical technologists, and clerical people went there to make sure that that one got done. Now we've got a lot of people on the list here, and we've got a lot of people on the list in Carbondale in conjunction with not only the School of Medicine people in Carbondale, but the other scientists and faculty members there to help out the lab there as well. Our learners, the first and second year medical students, PA students, are continuing to learn as they did before. Our six-person tutor groups are perfect on WebEx. As a matter of fact, I don't think they want to do in-person anymore after this group's going on. Our year three and year four students have been sidelined by direction of the Association of American Medical Colleges, and they're not seeing patients right now, but they're performing valuable functions. The third year medical students, a number of them have become the child care for many of our essential workers and physicians who are meeting this crisis in the hospital and in the community. They also now man the telephones for the telemedicine visit. This is for our federally qualified health centers. They stand ready to do another shift for IDPH lab testing and to be dispersed throughout the state for triage if the governor's office wants them to do that. So let me just say there's a lot of great things going on. We could not do this without our partners. I'm so glad we're a community-based medical school right now because the partnerships that we've developed over time have really allow a system to be built to allow rural Illinois, where the small urban centers are, to really get ready for the upswing and the surge in this pandemic. So my thanks to everyone who's helped with that.
Okay. Trustee Curtis, is there anything you wish to add at this point?
No, I don't think so. I think Gary covered it well.
Okay. You know, in addition, you know, the crisis like this not only affect physical and financial health, but as down the road, there's going to be a lot of mental health issues that are going to have to be addressed, and we're going to need to get prepared for that.
Gary's team has already stood up a mental health line. It's out in the communities in which we serve. We have a hotline call, and our chair of psychiatry, Dr. Wolf, is playing a vital role in curbing the behavioral outpatient, because you're right, we've even had many suicide calls come in on our mental health screening line that's available for COVID.
Yeah. And I'll mention that the pandemic health workers will be on the ground for that. You know, they'll be finding the problems that are there. They'll all be formed in trauma-informed care, which is essential for that. So, yes, our chair of psychiatry, Kari Wolf, has been very comprehensive in developing programs for mental health.
Okay. Any board members have any questions of Dr. Cruz, Chancellor Dunn, or Pembroke? Okay. Any other issues to come before the board? Yes.
Yeah, I just want to say two things. So thank you to Jerry for the really comprehensive overview and gives me daily updates on what's going on across the state, which have been incredibly helpful. So if anybody hasn't seen those, it really does give a comprehensive review of everything that's going on as well as what we're doing. But back to the resolution, one of the things I did want to say, no one has asked it yet, but I want to make sure you're all aware of, with housing and dining, what that refund will cost us is probably about $4 to $5 million per campus. So that's just the housing and dining alone before we get into any other fees. That cost is about $4 to $5 million. What exactly will be will depend on once we go through that whole process of looking at every individual case, but that, that gives you a rough idea of what that refund will be in and of itself.
Well, a few months ago, I don't think anybody anticipated we'd be in this situation, but we're all in it together, and together we're going to get through this crisis. And I cannot be any more proud of the SIU system and what our medical school is doing, what the campuses are doing in this effort to support our state and federal government in trying to beat this virus back to where we can get back to some kind of normalcy, if that ever, I don't even know what normal is anymore. But is there anything else any other board member wish to address? If not, that concludes the business of the Board of Trustees today. The next regularly scheduled board meeting will be held April 30th at SIU Carbondale. At this time, it is planned that the meeting will be held via Zoom meeting and will be live streamed for public viewing like today. May I have a motion to adjourn? It's been moved by Dr. Lockett, seconded by who?
Second.
All right. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All the same sign. Motion carries. This meeting is adjourned. And again, thank you everyone for making time for today. And Dr. Mahoney will keep us updated as events warrant. Thank you very much.
Incentivizing. So it adjusts the money.